I got stage fright now. I got to record this. Huh? My name's Ed, and I'm an alcoholic. Rena, God told me to tell you, you owe me lots of money. I'd like to welcome the newcomers and the visitors. Come back. This is where I got lots of help from. AA. I'm supposed to tell you what it was like, how I got here, and what it's like today. And as I look out over the crowd, I know probably three quarters of you fairly well, if not really well. So, if you each want to take a turn and tell my story for me, it's okay too. Well, what it was like was, I got introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous when I was 10 years old, when my dad was given an alternative to get sober, or mom was taking us kids away. And it wasn't much of an alternative, so he decided to go down to Serenity West, which was a rehab back in the day, 1969. I thought it was appropriate that I went to bars with my dad, so I went to a lot of meetings with my dad. So I've been around this recovery bit for a lot of years. I still ain't got it. Yeah, we went to meetings together as a family. I should back up and say that my dad was drinking. The biggest thing I remember about my dad drinking, I was going to bars with him, specifically the Legion on Friday and Saturday night. There was probably 15 or 20 of us. We were all called the Legion Rats. You know, we got a bottle of pop and chips and ran outside. That was about it. But there was a lot of problems caused from alcohol even before I picked up drinking. You know, it's a family disease. So my dad got sober. Went to Alateen. So now I started becoming an expert on the 12 steps already at a young age. Served me well. I got an A for it in a health class one time. I did a report on Alcoholics Anonymous. That's the only A I ever got in high school. But where I was at in school all the way through, I never felt like I belonged. I always felt nobody cared, nobody loved me. And that's the way I felt for a lot of years. I always have been heavy. I was this big in, I think, 8th or 9th grade. I lost weight after high school for a while, but I was 300 pounds when I graduated high school. So I've always been picked on. Always had a complex, so had a lot of self-esteem issues. So by the time I hit high school, the only thing I was involved with was kind of the nerdy kids and went to AV class. It was kind of fun, all about electronics and stuff back then, help with plays and stuff, which led to my first drunk. We did Guys and Dolls, and I was in stage crew. So when that was all done with, we had a cast party. This is a sign of time, sign of my future, and I didn't even realize it. It was the first time I got drunk, first time I puked because of drinking, first time I kissed a girl, and the girl's father come to pick her up. Well, sisters, the sisters called her dad or whatever. They come down and pick them up. And I asked him for a ride home. He was a constable, so I had the whole gambit involved. And he threw me in my front yard as my dad's looking out the door. So it was kind of like my future. So I'm quite sure you can tell I was really in love with my life by the time I graduated high school. I hated my life. I hated where I lived in Girard. I hated everything about my life. Hated my family. So I made this smart move and figured I'd pre-enlist in the Navy. They're going to love me more than my family did, I figured, I guess. So I graduated high school in 1977. And here's my thinking process. It still wasn't the best. July, I'm going into the boot camp, right? Now, Great Lakes is kind of like the same weather we got, really hot. I decided that wasn't hot enough. I decided to enlist, and we're going into Orlando, Florida. So, not too bright thing. It was 110 in the shade on the asphalt. I mean, I passed out three times. The best part about that was only there a month. I got sent home, basically. I was not ready to leave the nest. I was really immature. I was afraid. I was afraid of everything and everybody in my life. And it was a dark place. And it got worse. So I came home from Orlando in August of 1977. And we were in a medical holding company down there. And we were allowed to stay on base and drink. We went to the bowling alley every night and drank. So I drank every night that I was there. So by the time I got off the plane in Erie, I couldn't hardly stand up. And I wasn't even drunk. I just couldn't stand up. I was shaking. My dad had to carry me to the truck to get me home. I was bad for a couple of months. I was 17 years old. And my dad had side jobs, and he was putting up siding in Erie someplace. He would not allow me up more than two rungs in the ladder because I was so bad physically. But being young, I bounced back pretty quick. I got a job in Lake City, got a car, got money, ran to Ohio and started drinking. You drink when you're 18, but I started at 17. I got a head start on that. I drank a lot over in Ohio. Drank a lot in PA. Age didn't matter to me. I drank wherever I could get it. Not really causing any problems yet, per se. But I knew from all the exposure I had to Alcoholics Anonymous, when I had a hangover or I had a fight, it reminded me of some leads that I heard, of course. So I always say this about that. People tell me that when they go out, after they've been here for a while, that AA spoiled their drinking. I can attest to that. AA spoiled my drinking from day one. I didn't have any of those fun times without AA destroying my thought process. I will say this, that I understand this is a singleness of purpose meeting, but I will say this about my drug usage. Everything about my drug usage was surrounded by better, longer able to drink. The first time the only drugs I ever bought was Black Beauties, which was speed, which is amphetamines, okay? Because I could drink longer. That's the only reason I did them. I didn't take them that long, maybe a couple of years. I think it was up that whole time. That's what it felt like. I was a zombie by that time. I'll skip up a little bit. I went to work at what is now Giant Eagle out in Girard. It was Value King back then. My drinking got accelerated when I worked there. Blackout. So I wasn't even legal to drink yet, and I believe my first blackout happened. I was coming up the aisle to go to work in the produce department. I thought I was coming back from break. No. I had been there for 2.5 hours. I don't remember it. And then my boss, he worked in the rock bands. So he asked if I could help him out that next weekend. That started a career working with the bands for 4 or 5 years. I don't remember much of that. It was a good time. But I was also exposed to probably every drug under the sun except for sticking a needle in me. But I did it because the guys were doing it. Or the girls wanted to do it. You know, whatever. You know. I lived with a couple of the band members down in Edinburgh for about 6 months. Friday night, the girls upstairs, I cooked them spaghetti, bought a big bottle of wine, and I hated wine. And they had dope to smoke. But that was the only reason they did that, because the girls wanted to do it. So I do not consider myself an addict. And that's probably all the rest of you're ever going to hear about drugs. So I'll tell you right now, chronologically, I'm guessing at the time. I got a kind of an order and things go in, and that's about it. Life was getting pretty bad for me. I can remember coming home one time. It was raining really bad. I just remember bits and pieces. It's after drinking. Pulling in the side yard, because that's where I parked my truck, just because that's where it ended up, I guess. I don't know, but I was out of the way of everybody else, and I'm laying in this mud wet yard with 1 foot up in the truck. The truck was running, and my mom and dad screaming. Not at me. I'm going, let's get him in the house. He goes, no, he got there by himself. He can get home, in there by himself. He reached over and turned the key off the truck, took keys out so it wouldn't go nowhere. I still don't know how I got into the house. So there was many fights that happened over me. So I was off and running. By this time, my mom and dad were really starting to have problems, and that's their inventory. But it reflected on my life and how I felt about things at that time. And they ended up getting a divorce of 27 years of marriage. And my dad had, I'm in his teen years, I'm guessing, 10 to 15 years sober. My mom left. I thought that was such a great thing that I ended up getting married 6 months later. I don't remember getting married. I was in a blackout. Still don't remember getting married to my first wife. I know we were supposed to get married. We got married a few months early over in Pierpont, Ohio. Her folks lived there. I'll get to that. So we set up shop, my wife and I, first wife and I, in the little apartment in Girard. She was a drinking buddy. She was my one of my friend's cousins. But she goes, she's fun to party with, but don't marry her. We all follow orders like that, don't we? Don't do that! So we set up shop in a little apartment. I can remember vividly, you know what the rent was? $145 a month. Okay. It didn't take us long. We were behind in rent. She was working and I was working. So what does a good drunk do? I skedaddle in the middle of the night with everything we own in the back of the station wagon to her mom and dad's house in Ohio. Excuse me. So, we're living in Ohio. Not much changed, you know, because they drank too, so I didn't have to hide it too much. So they had this bright idea. They bought a brand new trailer up in Ashtabula, and they said, well, guess what? You guys can have the house. Just keep up the mortgage payments. Mortgage payments are $165 a month. Can you tell where this is going? But before that happened, everybody knows Buzz G. I come home one day from work, and my dad and Buzz were in my house. I thought they were going to do an intervention on me or something. My wife had called them. She had a problem. She stood up in the meeting and introduced before I did. So with everything I said so far, my life's going really well, isn't it? I'm 23 years old by now. I'd gone to the doctors in Conneaut because I feel like crap. He did blood work on me, listened to my heart, and the blood work came back, and I went back to see him, and he goes, you really need to quit drinking. My liver and kidneys were just not working well, I guess. 23 years old. Okay. So now, we're getting these notices in the mail because they never told the mortgage company that we were going to be buying the house. We were just paying them. They were paying the mortgage. Well, we were paying the mortgage direct because we were getting all these nasty letters from the mortgage company. So what does a good drunk do? I left in the middle of the night. I had a truck by now. And he threw everything in the back of the truck because we had more things. Went to my dad's house. He's disabled now. We need to take care of him. Yeah, okay. So that blew up that side of my wife's family. We weren't doing well either. My dad had told me one time, don't you ever lay a hand on her. I don't know if she told me or not, but I jacked her against the wall. But you know, and I never hit her, but that, I'm not excusing what I did because it was totally wrong. And I still feel bad to this day that I did that, put a hand on a woman. Because he didn't, her and my ex, my dad and my ex-wife never really got along. He says, because I'll take a baseball bat and I'll kill you. I get the message. So we're living at my dad's. She's going to Al-Anon, not because of me, She said it wasn't because of me. But so I'm sneaking drinking now. Like, my dad wasn't going to know. So our marriage was going so well, my wife left for a friend of mine in the program. I was really heartbroken. We never should have gotten married, and that's all finally been discussed. I'll get to that too. But so when I, my aunt was visiting from Spokane, Washington, and myself, my dad, my wife, my aunt were sitting around talking one July night, early July 4th, 1985, which coincidentally is my anniversary date. I said, "Dad, I think I'm an alcoholic." So he got on the phone in the answering service. He did a fair job of staying out of my program. But that's okay. Which started my journey into Alcoholics Anonymous, of me being an alcoholic. My first meeting was Friday night. I believe it was called the South Area Group. It was up in the Perkins Church off of Peach Street, behind Mill Creek Hospital, somewhere up in that neighborhood up in there. I don't remember much about it. Some lady talked to, she spoke, and I think she was from Cleveland, and she'd killed somebody, shot him in the head or something. Got my attention, but that's the only thing I remember from that meeting. So I knew the gig. I had to get a sponsor. I did. I did that quite well. I got a few sponsors my first year. I had probably four or five sponsors. And I will touch on that now since Paige did. Sponsorship is very important. But I will say this about that. You got to utilize a sponsor. I'd want to cry to a guy that I heard something great that he said from this podium. And I go spill all my woes to him, and he'd pat me in the back, and then we talk later. And that never happened. I never went back to him. I never called him, never saw him. I just kind of avoided him. And I did that a few times. I probably had four or five sponsors the first year. So, I was getting sicker. It was untreated alcoholism. Because I knew better. See, I'd been in Alteen and I'd been around AA. I knew better than these sponsors. They didn't have all that much time. I was pretty sick, as most of us are when we get to these rooms. So, I had a moment of clarity. I prayed or something, and I come up with a great thought, or it was put into my mind, that I was either going to get serious about this program or I was going to go get drunk. Those are my two choices. So I figured I better give this thing an honest try. So since I've been around these rooms a long time, who was I going to get to be my sponsor that I was going to listen to? Well, he's no longer with us, but it was Dick Hurdle. Yeah, real nice and meek and mild-mannered person. Yeah. So I called Dick up, and like I say, some of this is chronic. Even early on, my brain wasn't working. I don't know if I went in to see him. We did it over the phone. I think I went in to see him, because at some point I did. I said, "Dick, I'd like you to be my sponsor." And I should preface it to the people that knew him. He was being very nice to me. I should have known better, because looking back on it, he was setting me up to let me string myself along with my lies coming out of my mouth. So he says, "Okay, well, we'll see how this goes." He says, "What step are you on?" Mind you, I'd already had all these sponsors that I didn't work with. I probably said, "I'm on step six," and then he lowered the boom on me. Not very nicely. He was the normal Dick that I knew. You know, you'd had how many sponsors since you've been in? You're on step one. Well, I kind of made a promise to myself, or me and God, or something, that was going to give it a shot, so I was stuck. But I had a resentment. So I had something that I could put into the steps, I guess. So we did a little bit of step work, probably one, two, and three. Because, like I say, it's still cloudy early on. It was about a little over a year sober. But I also had another sponsor, Don Harrington. I got that today, kind of yin and yang of AA. He was a little more calmer, a little quieter. He lived out in Girard, went to a lot of meetings together. He was my co-sponsor. So I thought, Don, you might help one day. He says, come on over to my house on Saturday about, I don't know, 1 o'clock, we'll say, in the afternoon. Oh, he needs my help with something. Good. So I go over, and we go down at split level, we go down to the basement. He hands me a legal pad and a pen. He says, do your 4-step now. And he walked away, so I get you a cup of coffee. He's got me a cup of coffee. I don't know how long I spent on it. I know it wasn't a very good job, but it was something. And he came back and he looked at it. He goes, there's nothing good on here. I said, well, there's nothing good in my life. He's put some good stuff on here. He walked away. Then this searching this and doing that, keep it simple, because I wasn't capable of doing anything to a great extent anyways. Just kind of get me through it and do something. So I got through the 4-step. He says, well, when do you want to do your 5th step or something? I said, well, I think I'm going to do it with my pastor that I grew up with. I'm still sidestepping. My higher power has a sense of humor. I called my pastor up and made an appointment, went and talked with him. He says, what's up? Well, I quit drinking, I'm going to AA. He says, yeah, I heard. Small town of Girard, what do you expect, right? He says, well, what's going on? I said, well, I'm working the steps, and I'm on step 5. He says, well, what do you got to do? I said, well, I got to tell you how bad it was, and you're going to talk about it with me. And he didn't like, just turn around and pull the big book off the shelf behind him. He said, let's read about this together. Come to find out, this gentleman, during college, his roommate went to Alcoholics Anonymous, and he went to meetings with him for over 3 years. He figured since he was going to be a pastor, that vocation kind of needed a little bit of experience in that area. We got a chuckle about that last time I saw him. And that's okay. That's okay. I didn't appreciate it at the time. I knew where the joke came from. I kind of looked up. So I always believed in God. He's no longer with us either. I miss these guys. I didn't understand a lot of it back then. I miss a lot of these old timers. And one day Dick may be angry and I got another sponsor. I didn't tell him, of course. I was scared of him. So I got another sponsor, Bob Allshouse from Conian. I will say this, Bob was my sponsor for probably more than 15 years and he was the best friend I ever had. And there's a reason behind that why I say that. I went into him every couple of months and I whined and cried and my life got better for a moment. My life got better for a moment because I got shit out for a moment. And that'd go on and on. For years it went on like that. And meanwhile inside I'm dying. Untreated alcoholism because I wasn't putting any effort into my own recovery. Long about 5 years sober. Why, you know Jan? She's my current wife and final wife. She broke the mold. One I shouldn't have got married and one I should have got married to a lot earlier. I've known her longer than I knew my first wife. We worked together at the store at Giant Eagle. So, yeah, you talk about guys that in their drinking they take hostages. At 5 years sober, I believe I took a hostage. I had her conned, and then when we got married, I turned into the real yahoo putz that I really was, and I didn't treat her very good. And I'm not proud of that today, to this day. So we had a son. Joy of my life. My wife's the joy of my life, too. That son was, I treated that son rotten. It's the early years of his life, and I'm not very proud of that. Untreated alcoholism. You know, I was going to meetings and dying and hearing all these success stories of guys coming in after me and they're getting happy, getting jobs, getting back with their families, getting new cars, having kids, succeeding in life. I wasn't. I was still floundering because I wasn't doing anything. I can't see that clock. Look here. At this. I got mine here. Okay, we've got plenty of time. I got as much time as I want. You guys can leave if you want. So I got sicker and sicker in a lot of ways. I can't tell you exactly when it happened, but I was really getting bad. It was 12 years sober, dry, whatever you want to say. Something had to change. So we started going to church because I really believed that my son needed one belief system set down for him. He had something to draw back on. We went as a family. I thought it was important, which it was, and it was the beginnings of a spiritual walk. I'm not going to get into much of a religious aspect, but this is what happened for me. Got close with the pastor. He became my spiritual advisor and still is to this day. He's a great friend of mine. This is a different pastor. So there is a spiritual weekend that my wife and I went on. Men go 1 week. The next month, the wife gets to go. Because most husbands don't want to go, so they make the wives really want to go, so they bug the husbands, so they go first. So I'm not going to get much into that because it's a Christian retreat. But I will say this about that. It's the first time I ever felt a love of God in my life. Ever. I felt embraced that weekend. My life got... No, it didn't. It didn't get better yet. But I was awake to a potential of hope that there was a higher power out there for me. Excuse me. But I was still dying on the inside. But I was kind of headed in the right direction. And see, looking back, I see all these key points in my life. I didn't see them when I was going through them because I was miserable. I was very closed-minded. My dad calls me up and goes, hey, because we'd followed our pastor to a small church out in Cranesville. He says, dad calls up and goes, hey, weren't you supposed to start a meeting out there? The pastor had asked me to start a meeting a year before this. I wasn't listening very well. Tuxedo Bob, most of you guys remember them. I got some time in. My dad was a good friend of his. And he says, somebody called me up and wanted me to start a meeting out there at the Presbyterian Church on State and Crane. So my dad called me. I says, all right, I get the message, guy. So I called a few other old-timers. We started a meeting. I knew better than to go say I started the meeting. I knew enough not to do that. It was the best thing ever happened to me. I had to show every day. The church wouldn't give anybody else a key but me. So I had to be there every week. Make coffee, a chair, secretary. Went to that meeting for 15 years. But that was not only that, it was a great thing for me to get active and put something back into AA. My sponsor at that time, I didn't have him then, moved out from Erie, short distance from the church. He was a neighbor of the church. He was 5 miles away. And in the country, that's a neighbor. So I got to know my current sponsor, Jim. Where is it? Yeah, you can't tell this. You're not allowed to tell this, John. That's his sponsor. My grandpa's sponsor is here tonight. He's taking notes. So I got to know Jim at this meeting. And by this time, I got to back up because it's very important. The spiritual weekend I went on, or my heart attack, I still don't know which happened first. 41 years old, I had a heart attack. I was approximately 15 years sober. Next morning in the intensive care, the doctor comes in and goes, you have any stress in your life? I felt like a cartoon, a big bubble went off. You hear me now? Because I knew at 15 years sober, I shouldn't be feeling that kind of stress. There was no damage to my heart, no nothing. It was 100% due to stress. Yes, you can have a heart attack due to stress. Instead of the curb lane, I was in the next lane a little bit. I was going a little bit. I understood where I needed to be headed. Because at that point, just before I asked my sponsor to be my sponsor, for Jim to be my sponsor, I wanted to put a bullet in my head. I didn't admit that for the longest time. Untreated alcoholism for almost 20 years because I wasn't doing anything with what was offered to me, this gift of sobriety. Jim and I went through the steps, 1 through 12 in a timely manner. Well, isn't that amazing? laughing at? What are you laughing at me for? Your life will change if you go through the steps and do them as best as you can at that moment. You will change your life. That's the promise. And I can guarantee that'll happen because I know what happens when you don't. I have something to compare it to. I can get emotional standing up here. And I'll tell you a little story I tell now. Before I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was in a deep, dark pit. Black. Down in the ground. My life was ugly. It was nasty. And God told me to shut up. I got to go sit down. In that deep, dark pit, people were reaching their hand down to me before I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, because there's great people out there that aren't sober and are not alcoholics. And then when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, people were reaching a hand down to me in that deep, dark pit. Guess what I was doing? Out of fear, I was swatting those hands away. I lived in fear most of my life. I've had some spiritual experiences in my life as I look back upon them. Most of them I didn't see. But this last one I saw going through it. I knew kind of what was happening and was around, excuse me, I was around 25 years sober. And I will say sober at that time because I had done some step work. It was the hardest 5 years of my life, but the best, most productive spiritually for me. Rick may understand this. I got hurt at work. Short version, I had 3 surgeries on my nerves, and it's still only right. I'm disabled now. I call it forced retirement, and it sucked to begin with. I didn't want to retire. It was the best job I ever had. It was the hardest job I ever had. But spiritually, I had to dig, and I knew I had to dig, or I was going to die. It was hard for me to go out of there like that. I gained 65 pounds back, which I was not happy about. So I'm losing some of it slow, but wasn't happy about that. But what turned out of that, the last 5 or 6 years, I have a spiritual life. I have a connection with a higher power and a relationship with a higher power I never had before. I have a couple spawns eat pigeons, since Tom's sitting here, they call pigeons when he's here. Try to fire him, but he won't go away. No, I love him dearly. It's a running joke with us. I love him dearly. I have another sponsee. Oh, man, I'll tell you, it's been a journey with these two guys. We've been able to work the steps with these guys. I have another guy, technically I'm his sponsor. He's moved to Ohio. He's a carbon copy of what I was the first 15 years or so in his rooms. It's scary to watch from the other side. It's scary to watch. The journey that I'm on today isn't a pretty one sometimes. That's okay. A little bit bigger part of that story, I was sent to Pittsburgh to a workman's comp doctor to try to put me back to work. At 25 years sober, I should not have had the fear instantaneously come back to me because I didn't have a relationship with a higher power. The first time I ever got my hands and knees to my higher power is when I got home from that appointment from Pittsburgh. That changed my life. That was a spiritual experience, and I knew it when I was going through it. The fear lifted me from that day forth. I have had very little fear. And when I have fear, it's a red flag for me that I need to do something or change something or ask for help. Or give a getaway, something. There are days that I'm not the best example to Alcoholics Anonymous, other than the fact that I haven't had a drink in over 34 years. And this is a journey. I'm finally on the journey. I like when that whistle went out because that first thing I thought of, I'm on a journey. I'm on the train of sobriety. It's a little corny thing I come up with, but that's okay. My wife hates them corny jokes. Tom loves them. That's why I keep them around. Are you lying to me? Maybe. Yeah. I have a great life today. How do I want to put this? I believe that the steps will lead you to a great place in your life with a connection with your higher power. But before that, what saved my ass was getting involved in the fellowship. I have friends, I have sponsees, I have great acquaintances. I've got a phone log, book, whatever you want to call it. I didn't have this 15 years ago. I had a handful of people I could call on because I was not engaging in my own recovery. Kevin, I told you what I was going to get stuck because I think it's very important that I go through this. I got a little note in my pocket. It says chapter 5 on it. And the reason I want to talk a little bit about chapter 5, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. And what does that mean? You come into Alcoholics Anonymous, you get a sponsor. You work the steps, you get back to others. That's simple. What do the 12 steps mean to me? In a simple, it beats the hell out of my ego so I can allow God in. Collectively, that's what the 12 steps are for me. And you don't change one word. You don't add anything, subtract things, and make it to what you think Alcoholics Anonymous should be. Alcoholics Anonymous saved my life, saved my father's life, saved my sister's life, saved everybody's life here. So how dare I change that or allow anybody else to try and change it? Singleness of purpose. I'm an alcoholic. I'm here to help alcoholics. It's the only thing I can relate to. So the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, is a lifesaver. Men smarter than me, more inspired from me, inspired from God, wrote that big book. So how dare I change it? That finally is what saved my life. You know what? My son may need this someday, God forbid. Well, maybe, because he didn't have a spiritual life, maybe that'd be a great thing. I don't know. I want to keep the doors open for the next generation. It saved my life and gave me a peace beyond all understanding. You know, there's a pamphlet, and there's one back there. There's only one. I think it's one of the most important pamphlets called The Group. It explains what the meetings are all about. Open meetings, closed meetings. It's very simple. So if we don't change anything, another alcoholic may have another chance to get sober, like I did. And then you guys can be patient with them for 20 years like you were with me. You know. For a while there, I was doing this all wrong. I was thumping the big book. That's not the right way to do it. I have to walk as an example of what my higher power wants me to be. And what's the biggest thing that my higher power teaches me and everybody here? A four-letter word called love. I'm supposed to love everybody. Now, if somebody comes to me for help, I'm not going to turn them away. Either I can help them or somebody else can. I can maybe show them in the right direction. You know, my dad got sober in a time where they started in chapter 5 in the big book. There's a lot before that. There's a lot of great things before that. That is our textbook that showed me how to live, as shown out through you people when you work your steps. So, rarely have we seen a person fail who has thoroughly followed our path. So you get a sponsor who's got a little bit of time in these rooms, who has worked the steps, and that's the question you're allowed to ask them. Have you worked the steps? And that's a good qualification to be a sponsor. And then they can show you how this thing works side by side with you in a walk of recovery. Don't keep it complicated. Keep it simple. I'm not a learned man, but I got to keep it simple. So that's why I keep coming back. What saved my bacon during that 5 and 6 years going through all that crap with my injury, I went to more meetings. More meetings. More meetings. Step work. I gained a couple sponsees during that time. Gotta give it back. I gotta give it back. Because if somebody else wasn't giving it back, I wouldn't be standing here today. I would have put a bullet in my head. Have I got it right yet? Not close. Not even close. That's why this is a journey. So when you close that cover in the casket, wait a minute, my son's put me in a home first. He's put me in a home. He already told me that. Before they cover me in that casket, I want to give as much of this away as I can. I mean, I'm not good at it. I'm not an expert. I can't quote the big book very much. But we're all success stories sitting here tonight because we didn't drink today. And if we don't drink tomorrow, we may have another chance to have another day of sobriety. Emotional sobriety is a different thing. I'm not always there. I'm a little nuts. But I love life today. I hated my life before. I had a dark soul. So please keep coming back. If you didn't like my message, latch on to somebody else. I got a narrow following. Never mind. I love all you guys, and thank you for another day of sobriety.
Powerful. Thank you, Ed.